This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. Our guest this morning is Sarah Westervelt, Toxics Research Analyst for the Basel Action Network, a Seattle-based nonprofit that works to prevent the globalization of the toxic chemical crisis by challenging the toxic trade from richer to poorer countries. Sarah Westervelt is here today to tell us about the just-released photo documentary and report she co-authored titled The Digital Dump, Exporting Reuse and Abuse to Africa. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you, Diane.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about the Basel Action Network?
We are a very small environmental group that is based here in Seattle, Washington, but has a global scope in terms of our work to try to prevent hazardous waste from being dumped on developing countries. And currently we're working on issues that include electronic waste, of course, as well as ship breaking. There are a lot of obsolete Navy ships in particular that are being dumped on developing countries. So we work in those two areas and are also working towards a global ban on mercury.
Focusing on the specific problem of electronic waste, could you remind us of the toxic products found in electronic materials such as computers and television sets and the impacts these products can have on human health and the environment?
Well, probably the largest quantity of toxic material is lead. Most of our cathode ray tube monitors and televisions, these are the ones with the heavy glass screens, have a minimum of 6 to 8 pounds of lead for the smaller cathode ray tubes, or CRTs. So lead is a big problem. There are lots of other toxins as well. There is mercury that occurs in switches and lighting, especially for the little laptop screens. There is hexavalent chromium and cadmium and arsenic and beryllium and a long list of toxic chemicals that have a variety of impacts on human health, including neurotoxins and carcinogens and endocrine disruptors. There's another chemical or family of chemicals that's recently been noted as a tremendous problem, and these are the brominated flame retardants that are intentionally added to the plastics to protect us from fire. But they are very persistent biological toxins, meaning they last in the environment for decades without breaking down, and they also accumulate in the body. So we're finding these brominated flame retardants showing up in women's breast milk and in fatty tissue all the way up to the North and South Pole, where they're not using these materials to begin with, but these toxins are being transported through air and water and wind.
How large is the electronic waste stream at present, and how much has it been growing?
It's huge. It's the fastest growing waste stream in the United States. It is increasing at a rate of 4 to 5% per year. The EPA estimates that there are about 133,000 computers per day that are discarded or recycled in the United States alone. And if you realize that we're just one developed country that is already plugged into the digital age, there's just a tremendous volume of equipment because either it's obsolete and we don't want it anymore, or it's broken and it costs too much to repair it, or we simply do massive upgrades in a corporation to replace new equipment. The average lifespan for new equipment is about 18 months. So you can understand that there's just a huge amount of volume, and it's fairly invisible. Many of us haven't walked into these warehouses. They're absolutely filled to the limits with pallet loads of televisions and monitors and keyboards. It's just an incredible sight to see the volume.
BAN has been working on the issues surrounding the export of used electronics from developed to developing countries. What's driving this transport?
The trade in electronic waste is absolutely driven by economics. It is much cheaper for people in this country to sell their electronic waste, which many times is hazardous waste if it's not working, to sell it to a broker who then ships it to a developing country rather than paying to have that equipment properly recycled here in the U.S. or in a developed nation. So economically, there's a huge incentive to do the wrong thing. And In addition to that, it's very important to know that the United States is the one developed nation that has not ratified an international treaty called the Basel Convention, which is very explicitly designed by countries to put up a barrier for the trade in hazardous waste. So all other nations, all other developed nations, and about 165 nations altogether now have ratified this Basel Convention. The U.S. remains the one country that has not ratified it. What we're saying as a country is we'd like to have free trade in hazardous waste. We'd like to be free to sell it to the highest bidder and to get it offshore to protect our citizens. The net result, of course, is that we have this tremendous flow of waste from the largest waste generator in the world to the poor countries. And many of them have legal obligations under the Basel Convention not to trade in waste with the United States. But between the economics and the fact that the U.S. has failed to ratify this international treaty, we are a very irresponsible nation on the global stage when it comes to toxic waste.
Before we talk about the report you have just released, could you briefly review your previous report, Exporting Harm, the High-Tech Trashing of Asia, 2002?
Sure. We went to China, to the Guangdong province in China, back at the end of 2001, and in 2002 put out this report and also a film by the same name, Exporting Harm. And what we found in that region of China is a tremendous volume of electronic waste, again, was being shipped into Hong Kong and then over to that city through a river port. And a local journalist there in the Guangdong province estimated that about 100,000 people in four different villages called Guayu are still breaking down electronic waste, primarily from the U.S., but also from Japan and Korea, some from Europe. And their interest, of course, is to reclaim the materials because they are now manufacturing much of the world's products and knickknacks, and they are very eager to get the copper and the aluminum and the plastics even. And so they were real interested in obtaining this scrap and were willing to accept the toxics that came along with it in order to get the materials that they needed to do the manufacturing there. What we found was some incredibly primitive technologies being used to extract these materials. For example, a circuit board set up would be next to a river where they would be using 100% acids to extract the little bit of gold that's in circuit boards and then dump the acids right into the rivers. And the riversides were just blackened with these acid levels. We took water samples and found extraordinary levels of lead, for example, 1,200 times higher than the World Health Organization limit for lead in drinking water. We also found that they were just taking these cathode ray tubes that I mentioned earlier, and instead of reusing the leaded glass, they were simply breaking the copper off the back because there was a market for copper, and they were throwing the leaded glass into what were their former irrigation ditches. So this was an entire region that had been growing rice, and in the last 8 to 10 years, they switched over to dismantling the world's toxic electronic waste because it was a little bit more profitable. And the entire region was so toxic that they're no longer able to use their water table. They truck in water from nearby villages because they cannot drink it. Nevertheless, there are families that that are doing this work, that live and work right in the same workyards. One of the other things we witnessed is they're burning wires at very low temperatures to reclaim the copper core in the wire. And when you burn this wire that has a PVC sheathing around the copper at low temperatures in open fires, it creates very toxic dioxins and furans and polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. These are things that are invisible, they're tasteless, and they are just coating this work area where these families are raised and are living. So all of this adds up to a tremendous flow of toxic waste from the rich to the developing countries, and it's completely wrong.
Has the situation in China gotten any better at all since you released your report?
After our film came out, the Chinese government decided to take some action. They have set up a system for trying to register the brokers who ship these container loads of waste into China so that if their government decides they want to turn back any of these containers, the brokers won't suddenly disappear. They are also trying to crack down and create restricted zones where this processing and disassembly of electronic waste can happen. What we're hearing so far is that these zones still contain fairly low-tech approaches to reclaiming the materials. So there's still a tremendous amount of impact on the environment and the human health in the region.
Let's move on now to your current report that you've just released. What led then to investigate the export of used electronics to Africa?
Well, after our first film came out, the Exporting Harm film, a couple of years went by and people did assume that because of the film, the problems had decreased tremendously. And because we knew that that was not true, we were investigating other locations and we kept hearing about Lagos, Nigeria, as being a very major destination for container loads of scrap from the United States. We did a little bit of scoping in the area and decided it was worthwhile taking a small film crew with us and went to Lagos, Nigeria back in just in September of this year, so a couple of months ago in 2005. And what we found there was something different from China in that they were not interested in reclaiming materials from the scrap, but rather were only interested in receiving working equipment that they could use. It's a nation that is very much interested in getting connected to the internet, and they want working equipment. What we found were huge computer villages there, where there were plenty of used equipment. About 40% of it was from the U.S. About 40% of it was from European countries. There was also 10 or 20% from Israel and Japan. So these were all developed nations that were represented. The problem is that it was very clear from the people that we interviewed in Lagos that they only wanted working equipment. And when we asked the question, what amount of the equipment that arrives is actually working, the estimates went up as high as 75% was pure junk when it arrived. They are unable to deal with these. They have no facilities for processing this hazardous waste. What they were doing with it instead is dumping it into formal and informal landfills. And then when the quantity gets too high, the mountains of this toxic electronic waste gets too high, they simply burn the mountains. And that creates the most toxic scenario for electronics, because then you have melting chemicals at low temperatures. And frequently these dumps were located around residential areas, and there were children and adults living and working and breathing this air that's full of these chlorinated and brominated dioxins and furans and all these other very toxic chemicals. So it was quite a horror scene to realize that here in this country, we load up a container, we get paid for it, and ship it over to Lagos, where they're not interested in getting our scrap, but rather just want working equipment so they can join the digital age.
I'm Diane Horn, and we're speaking with Sarah Westervelt, Toxics Research Analyst for the Basel Action Network. Our topic is Van's photo documentary and report, The Digital Dump, Exporting Reuse and Abuse to Africa. Could you go into some more detail about the volume of waste that's coming in to Nigeria?
We interviewed folks who were in charge of the computer villages there. And in the computer village in Ikija, they said that they were receiving about 500 container loads per month with about 800 units in each container. So you can see this is a tremendous volume that's coming in from not only the U.S., but these other nations as well. So what they do is to open up these containers and immediately pull out the material. They do have people who are trained to test the equipment and to repair it. However, much of this material is either not repairable, or it's so old and obsolete that even in Nigeria, they have no interest in using it. So there's no economic value for them to make the repairs. So this is the 75% of what's coming in that ends up in their dumps and their landfills and gets burned in open air situations.
Could you comment also on the information you found still stored and available on the computer hard drives in Nigeria?
Yes. To help provide some incentive for folks to be responsible with their electronic waste. We decided this time to buy some computers in Lagos and ship them to a forensic specialist in Switzerland, in Zurich, who took our hard drives that we shipped to him and, of course, found a great deal of information on them. He called it child's play to retrieve data. There was a hard drive found by the World Bank with very sensitive information, both from the organization and very personal emails from the employee at the World Bank, whose hard drive ended up in Nigeria. We also found a hard drive that was from the state of Wisconsin, a state department that was responsible for child protective services, and there was a tremendous amount of very detailed data with children's names and birth dates and parents' names and information that should never be getting out into the public. And we carefully redacted names of children and that kind of thing, but we also have that information in our annexes to our report to help people understand that in addition to there being laws to protect the privacy of all of us, there are also toxicity issues on this electronic waste. And waste generators, whether it's an individual or a corporation or a state agency, are legally liable and responsible for making sure that they turn over their toxic electronic waste to a very responsible recycler who will not export it to Nigeria or to China or to any other developing country, but rather will have it responsibly managed here in this country or in a developed nation.
Overall, what is the legality of what's happening in Nigeria in regard to importing used electronics? Is it legal under international law?
What is legal is if tested working equipment is shipped to Nigeria or another developing country. That equipment is considered a product, not a waste, and therefore there are no barriers to its trade. However, any equipment that is not working or hasn't been tested as working and therefore could be a piece of waste or needs major repairs that involve pulling hazardous components out, those are considered wastes under the Basel Convention, and it is illegal for them to be traded into Nigeria, for example. Nigeria has ratified the Basel Convention. However, one of the gentlemen there told us that they have not adequately transpose those international obligations into their domestic laws. So there's a disconnect there. But it's really important to understand that it is so much easier for a nation to control its exports than it is to control imports, as our country found out after September 11th. It's just not possible to inspect every single container that comes in. But if you set up your national laws and your regulation and your enforcement for exports, theoretically, you can do a much better job of controlling this waste. So the United States should not be shipping its toxic waste as defined internationally to about 132 countries right now, and we're doing it every day.
What are the governments or NGOs in the developing countries doing to protect themselves from this electronic waste?
Well, it's just now starting to come to light. I think in the last few years, these issues have had more visibility, and nations are starting to understand that in addition to the illegality of it, there is a huge long-term environmental impact and human health impact for these developing countries to accept this material. I'll be flying to Chile in a few weeks to help pass on information from our country for them to develop a system down in South America that will hopefully avoid repeating these problems. So developing nations in particular have the very challenging task of trying to help facilitate the income of or the incoming equipment so that their citizens can be connected to the web and have access to the digital age, and at the same time prohibit the toxic waste from entering into the country. And it's not an easy challenge. It means changing their laws. It means having good enforcement. And this is one of the reasons why nations created the Basel Convention, by the way. It's so important to understand that in so many developing countries, they don't have the infrastructure that we just take for granted here in the U.S. There is not good enforcement, and sometimes there are much weaker laws to protect people to begin with, and many times there's a great deal of corruption. There is not the whole legal structure that provides rights to workers and to surrounding communities, to a right to know what they're being exposed to, a right to protection, a right to sue if they've been violated. There are not medical systems set up to identify the exposures to these toxic chemicals and to treat them. And so there's this tremendous social safety net that we have here in this country that just doesn't exist in other countries. So we need, as a nation, United States needs to be very careful just to send the tested working equipment to developing countries. Even that creates some problems eventually because it will become waste. But the Basel Convention doesn't cover those problems. And so we've got to really step up to the plate here as a country and be far more responsible than we are.
What steps are the developing countries taking right now to address this issue?
Some countries are passing legislation that are trying to hold the manufacturers of this equipment more responsible for taking back all this equipment when the consumer doesn't want it anymore, whether it's working or not working. This is a concept called extended producer responsibility, and it's already in law in all of the European nations as of this past August. And the concept here is that if you have a toxic waste problem, you look at the life cycle of that toxic product and ask yourself, where is the most efficient leverage point within that life cycle to solve this toxic waste problem? And the answer is always that it's in the manufacturing stage. So Europe has adopted, and developing nations now are starting to adopt this concept of extended producer responsibility, whereby the manufacturer is asked to take back their toxic products at their end of life and pay for those end of life costs. And what this does is it builds in a very direct economic incentive for the manufacturer to lower the toxic inputs when they create these products in the first place, and to make them last longer, to make them more recyclable, to make them more easily upgraded. And then you have a much smarter system in place so that you're not generating the toxic waste in the first place. And this is the ultimate solution. If we had electronic waste with no toxins in it, we would still have a huge solid waste problem. But as it is now, we've got a huge toxic waste problem. So developing countries are actually, many of them are way ahead of the United States in moving forward on this legislation, which requires the manufacturers to take back their products when the consumer is done with them.
And how far along is the U.S. in following this trend?
There's been very little progress on a national level to move in this direction. There have been a few bills nationally that have been proposed, but so far they've been quite inadequate from our perspective. Because of the lack of federal action on addressing this e-waste problem, there are now many, many states that are trying to move forward to deal with it at a state level. I have to say there are state solid waste officials who are quite nervous about knowingly allowing these toxic waste into their landfills and even allowing them to be dumped on developing countries. So we now have something like 26 different states proposing 52 or 3 different bills, something in that vicinity, different bills on e-waste. And of course they are providing many different angles at addressing this issue. Manufacturers and retailers of these products would rather see a national system that's harmonized, one set of regulations for the entire nation. But because our federal government has not done this, the states are really trying to move forward. There are 4 states now that have bans on cathode ray tubes, at least these glass TVs and monitors in their landfills. There's a state of Maine that passed a law that will go into effect this coming year to try to require manufacturers to take back their products when consumers are done with it. So there's a number of things happening. And here in King County and Snohomish County to the north, they have banned the computer cathode ray tubes into the landfills there and have set up a system called the Take It Back Network, which is a group of recyclers and retailers who accept this material for a charge because it's hazardous waste and ensure that it is responsibly recycled. So you can always go to the King County and Snohomish County websites to look for those recyclers and retailers who are taking back equipment.
Could you say more about what consumers of electronics can do to help solve the problem? Obviously, responsibly recycling what they have already, but what else?
Well, First of all, it's so important for consumers to understand that because there isn't a national system that's set up for you to take back products free of charge, for now, you need to expect to pay to have your hazardous waste dealt with responsibly. So we ask that people just expect, in general, you can expect to pay $10 or $15 per monitor or TV for the medium-sized ones. In addition, my organization has created a set of criteria which is designed to identify those responsible recyclers based not only on U.S. law, but going beyond that to incorporate the international laws and definitions and also the principle of environmental justice, that which is basically the principle that no group of people based on their race or ethnicity or economic status should be disproportionately burdened with toxins. We have created a list that's on our website, www.ban.org, a list of responsible recyclers that we call e-stewards. They have signed the Pledge of True Stewardship and have committed to keeping these toxic wastes in developed nations and out of landfills and out of incinerators. So in addition to consumers going to our website to look at this list, consumers can also go to the Take It Back Network, both in King County and Snohomish County websites, to find their list of responsible recyclers as well.
What kind of response have you gotten so far to your report that you just released, the Digital Dump?
Oh, it's been tremendous. I have to say, we just got back from the eScrap conference in Florida, an entire conference devoted just to electronic waste. And at that conference were manufacturers and government agencies and recyclers and a few nonprofits like ours. We showed our new film, The Digital Dump, and put out the report. And it was extremely well received by the audience. They were waiting to see what we had come up with now, 3 years after Exporting Harm. I think the most gratifying thing for me at this conference was to realize that the issues that we have raised are now very much integrated in with the dialogue at all levels. Corporations are changing their policies. Recyclers are choosing new downstream vendors for managing their toxic waste. Government officials are recognizing our list of responsible recyclers, which goes beyond the federal regulations. And it was just very comforting to realize that these are valid issues that are now being widely accepted by all the players who are in this arena. So we have a whole lot of work to do still, because electronic waste is being shipped daily by the container load from this country, because our federal government still refuses to ratify this international treaty and to be a responsible player globally.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I would say that it's very important to understand that even though you paid money for your new computer or laptop or whatever piece of electronic, it is full of hazards, and you need to be very careful about what you do with that. Don't leave it in storage in your closet or your garage or your basement, because it'll just become more and more obsolete and have less and less value. Go ahead and log on to our website, ban.org, or the King County or Snohomish County websites, to the Take It Back Network, and try to find a responsible recycler who's close by you, and expect to pay a little bit of money to have it properly managed.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you very much, Diane.
We have just been speaking with Sarah Westervelt, Toxics Research Analyst for the Basel Action Network. For more information, call the Basel Action Network at area code 206-652-5555. Again, that's 206-652-5555. Or check on the web at www.ban.org, where you can download a copy of the report, The Digital Dump, Exporting Reuse and Abuse to Africa. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week.